It's a tale of two letters. The Dickens, you say? No, just two letters. You'll be surprised what they have to say. In fact, we'll be looking at so much more, including the Twitter war between MLK and Donald Trump. This is Father Voskin. I am a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, psychological, everything in between. This is episode number 502 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
It's ground coffee. Yeah, and it is, yes, ground, yes, you're right. Hey, how you doing? Welcome. We are so excited over here. I'm just now discussing semantics. Semantics are very, very important, right? Tonight, my sister Anush opens at the Roslyn Art Gallery with this exhibit of coffeescapes. Yes, not landscapes, coffeescapes. These are, well, if you drink Armenian coffee, you know that there's a tradition of turning them over, and in so turning them over, you see patterns, much like what you see up in the skies. And we had our fill of skies, too. I just got back from the MLK retreat. I have so much to tell you today. And we saw the footprint of God in the sky when we were looking at those stars. Well, much like the way that the ancients would line up the stars in their imagination and in their writing and point to different things in their lives, people look at coffee grounds and when they're turned over and see different imagery. And my sister has created an art out of that to actually put that cup on canvas and using coffee grounds as a medium. Yeah, that's what we were, yes, you're right. That's how this all started. Sean and I were talking about the idea of the coffee ground. I used a descriptor saying that she uses coffee grounds, but the artwork is really ground in coffee and in the metaphysical world, right? And the metaphysical world, of course, is all about the dreams that you see within those coffee grounds. The expectations, the hope, the love, the charity, everything's in there. So it's a pretty wild show. And I know a lot of you are far away and you're just getting this voice glimpse of it. I'm making you a promise because I just found out that on closing day, on January 31st, there's going to be, tonight is the opening night. January 31st is the closing night. On that day, they want me to do an interview with my sister, to be the interviewer for the show, to talk about the artwork. And I thought we'll record that one for sure and let you, the Next Step listeners, in on all this excitement that's going on over here. So that's just part of the excitement. And I have a lot to share with you today. I mean, some absurd things, too. Yeah, let me warn you, there's some absurd things coming up. I'm going to talk about also about ways things happen. You'd be surprised how things happen. But let me start off. I just got back from the MLK retreat, and I think I'm looking at all my notes for today's podcast. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you some of the reflections we had toward the end of today's show, because the way it's going to flow, it's kind of a nice cap to it. But we did recharge our batteries. Every time we get back from the MLK retreat, we sit there and we evaluate and we say, was it worth it? And absolutely. Because as you're leading up to it, there's a lot of frustrations. Because we're not only making presentations there, but also organizing the event. And this year we were up in Zaka Lake, completely unplugged from all of life. This is very unusual because we've done our MLK retreat now for 15 years. This is the 15th anniversary. We've always been someplace where there's been some kind of access to something. This was complete unplug. I mean, nothing was working. And it was interesting because I thought myself, I'm not going to talk for anybody else. I thought myself, I'd be like searching for the phone, looking down at it, looking for messages that were coming in. But once I got up there, I think I just kind of realized we're without any connectivity. And so it was almost like the phone just became a glorified camera at that point, something I'd keep in my pocket and pull out to try to record what was around me. And that too, it fell so tragically short of its expectations, in that once you see beauty like that, once you see nature like that, it's very difficult, if in fact maybe impossible, to record it. It just tells you what a great camera our eyes are, our brains are, our senses are. And we have a long way to come to get to a point where artificially we can manufacture cameras that will record the depth of the beauty, just the surrounding of the beauty. It was just terrific. And every time we get back from an MLK retreat, I've got to tell you, I do feel like the batteries are recharged. And I think that's the whole, that's the reason for retreats. And I love that word, recreation, to recreate. Just a place to just to plug in the batteries and realize that, you know, God's in charge and God's taking us to new places and just soaking it in, being open to the places where God takes you. We had a great group, even had a couple young kids there with family. When I say young kids, and they just add so much to it. Because as you watch them run around and play, you just start realizing that all the things that we've lost, you know, all the things that we've lost by the confines we put on ourselves. And sometimes it takes some time with young kids just to watch the freedom with which they move and express themselves. That was beautiful too. So a lot of things to share with you. I'm trying to put together a small little article that I could share with you, but I'll get into some of the details a little bit later in the program. I do want to start off with, let's call it the Nike section. The Nike section being, just do it. Just do it. How easy is that? Yeah. I love that, right? Just do it, right? Well, when it comes to church, we just don't know how to just do it. Oh, committees, organizations, letters, campaigns. Just do it. And guess who proved to be the just doer? None other than Pope Francis. Yes, Pope Francis. This is funny because last Monday we just got back from the retreat and we went directly to the Bible study. I mean, enough time for us to turn in the car, a van we had rented, and then went right to the Bible study. And en route, I received a text message from one of our dear members, Michelle, who was in Santiago, Chile, and she had seen the Pope. So she sent us a picture of the Pope in the Pope Mobile. She says, I was right there. So she was standing right in front and got a papal blessing. And so I shared that with the Bible study group. Well, lo and behold, on his way back, I guess back to Rome, from Chile, he's on a plane and a couple of flight attendants approach him. And he asks, you know, they went up to take a picture with him or something like that. And he asked, are you married? And they said, well, we wanted to get married in the church back in 2010. But because of the earthquake here in Chile, the church was destroyed. So we went and had a civil ceremony. But in the eyes of the church, we are not married. And the Pope said, would you like to get married? Right there on the airplane. And he married them. The Pope. Just do it. I mean, you know, you're the Pope. Just do it, right? And he did it. That's how easy it is. Well, why do I say that? You may say that. Well, okay, yeah, he's the Pope. He did it. And by the way, everything I talk about, like always, there will be links on today's show notes. So do check out the show notes. There'll be a link to this. It's a cute little story. I invite you to read it. Okay, why am I saying this? Because we just don't do it. Case in point, how often have you heard a list of demands that we have of the Armenian Church? Relevancy, right? Language, gender, these are all issues. You remember when people used to say, we need English in the church, and now we've got English in the church. We do English Vespers once a week, and we get together for services. We've done English liturgies, the Eucharist, and you think anybody's talking about it? No, shh. Be quiet, because it's easier to complain about it than just to do it. No, we just did it, and it's beautiful. It's happening. Same way with a marriage. Can it be on a plane? No, just do it, and it's done. Well, look at it. Look at the other one that always we hear about. Women in the church. When will the Armenian church allow women in the church? Armenian church has always allowed them. Always. It's written into the laws of the church. For some reason, during the last several hundred years, we've seen a decrease in it, but it doesn't mean that we don't have laws for it. Of course, there's no restriction. And so one of the bishops of the Armenian Church, namely Archbishop Sebu Sarkisian in Tehran, Iran, said, I need deacons at the altar. And you know what? The best qualified person for that position happens to be this woman, and he ordained a woman. Now, what's surprising about it, I shared with you just a brief bit of it last week on last week's podcast, but here's the surprising thing. This happened back in September. Now, if this was such a large, major issue, wouldn't this be bombarded and put in your face over the last 4 or 5 months since that time? But no. It's a non-issue. Non-issue in the sense that, hey, this is part of what the church is. And I'm saying this because a lot of times what we do is we talk about the church in an abstract manner. And by doing so, we forget that it's people that make up the church. And so this bishop, Archbishop Sebu Sarkisian, is a true leader. This is what bishops do. The bishops are technically the princes of the church. The kingdom of God here on earth has princes. And the princes are these bishops. They have the power. Just do it. You need someone to serve? Go ahead. Ordain them. I shared with you a really remarkable story back in the 1950s, late 1940s. This was Archbishop Didon Nersoyan. Some 20, 30 years after the Armenian Genocide, the devastation was so great that there weren't priests. There weren't enough priests to serve the needs, the spiritual needs of the community. And he was, as the primate of the diocese here in America, he needed to make a decision. Where are you going to get priests from? He found 6 candidates who were worthy, who had studied, and he said, I'm not going to exercise that small little portion of the rule which says marriage before ordination. Yeah, that's the rule. You get married, and then you are ordained, and if you're not married, you can take a vow of celibacy. But he says that's not applicable in this case, because the need is so great. And so he ordained 6 men, and he said, you are now priests, you're ordained according to the tradition of the Armenian Church, and you have, I don't know if he put a time limit or whatever, but he says you have this time to go out and get married. If you so desire to get married, I will honor that, and we will marry you as priests. Now, Why did he do that? Because the needs of the church are so great. This is called economia. It's a concept, the economy of the church. In other words, the needs of the church are so great that you need to bend some of the letter of the law to comply to the spirit of the law. Got it? You bend the letter of the law so that you can live by the spirit of the law. You need priests. Get with the program. There's a way of relieving this situation. Same way, we need deacons, we need servers, we need to accent the role of women in the church outside of the kitchen. Because in so many church communities, we know the role of women is in the kitchen. You bake, you clean. And there are women who are saying that I feel a calling. I want to do something different. And this Archbishop of the Armenian Church, Archbishop Sebu Sarkisian, said, okay. And he ordained a young lady named Ani. Ani was ordained as a deacon of the church. Now, these kind of leaders of our church need to be applauded. They need to be recognized. Whether it's an Archbishop Didon or an Archbishop Sebu, these are people that are saying that, you know, I'm taking it seriously. I've been appointed as a bishop, and this is what the needs of my church are. Just do it. Pope Francis on a plane. The couple's coming. They need to be married. The rule says you got to get married in a church. No, I'm the Pope. I am standing here. This is where the church is at this moment. Archbishop Sebu. Yeah, he could have, you know, gone and gotten permission, but he doesn't need to. He's a prince of the church. Nothing to argue about. There hasn't been a woman ordained in several years. It hasn't happened. No. I'm the prince of the church. I'll take care of it. I'm here. This is really, really important because we forget a lot of times that the church of the people, the common people, is a great church and is just as real as the confines of the building church. Now, I'm not putting a value on it. I'm not saying one is better than the other. All I'm saying is we've got to understand that it takes people to run churches. And at some point, the priest, the bishop, the ordained clergyman has to take on that leadership role and say that, yes, this is a need of the church. And yes, this is the way to fulfill it. Sometimes at a cost, right? Sometimes sticking out your neck. It's interesting because in the Armenian language, the word for the primate or that position of primate, in English, the prime clergyman, is arachnort. The verb is arachnortel, to lead. Arachnort is a leader. Literally, it means a leader. Someone who stands at the front of the line and says, this is the direction we're going to be taking. And so when you find leadership like this, it's up to all of us to applaud it and to hold them high as examples that we need to follow. Because in fact, the world didn't collapse. In fact, the world didn't fold over. The church didn't fall down when a woman was ordained. Just the opposite. We're all standing around applauding and saying, when's our turn? Why aren't there more people looking at it? We're so happy and we're so tickled. The plane didn't fall out of the sky when the Pope said that I will marry this couple. No, he's the Pope. He did it. You're a bishop. You did it. There was a show back in the 80s. It was called Dallas, featuring Larry Hagman. And there was an episode where the wife and everybody, they were talking about this oil. It was about oil fields and oil barons. This oil company had abused the land and had abused their rights. I forgot the exact nature of what the problem was, but they were fighting it. And one of the main characters, the Ewing man, Jock Ewing, gets up and he says, you're fighting against Tecapa. Guess what? I am Tecapa. And everybody just like pulled back. At some point, somebody's got to say that, look, I'm here. I'm doing it. You want English services? We're doing it. There's nothing more to it. Just do it. Look, I don't need a congressional probe. I don't need to have some kind of educational institution look at the problem. Right now, I've got tons of children who need to hear a spiritual message in a language that they can understand. Do I use English or a classic language that's obsolete? I'm going to use English. Just do it. You've got a couple in the middle of the air who are saying that we love each other. We couldn't get married because our church fell down. Just do it. You married them. You've got a diocese that needs women to be serving at the altar. There's no reason not to do it. Just do it. That's how simple it is. We complicate it, don't we? And I'm going to share with you the complications that come up. That's in the second portion of today's show. But I wanted to get this across to you today because it's so important that when we find people who are really brave enough, courageous enough to put themselves out there and say that, you know what? This is what my job is. My job is to oversee the church. I am a prince of the church. I'm taking responsibility for that. It's up to us to be there and make some noise and say that, don't touch them. This is what we need. This is the kind of leadership that we need. So let's take a break right now. I am going to play a song of the day, which we do every week. And thank you again for all of your nice suggestions. Here's another one that we received from Frank. Hope you enjoy it.
Only child alone and wild, a cabinet maker's son. His hands were meant for different work, and his heart was known to none. He left his home and went his lone and solitary way. And he gave to me a gift I know I never can repay. Quiet man of music, denied a simpler fate. He tried to be a soldier once, but his music wouldn't wait. He earned his love through discipline, a thundering velvet hand. His gentle means of sculpting souls took me years to understand. The leader of the band is tired and his eyes are growing old. But his blood runs through my instrument and his song is in my soul. My life has been a poor attempt to imitate the man. I'm just a living legacy to the leader of the band. Brothers' lives were different, for they heard another call. One went to Chicago, and the other to St. Paul. And I'm in Colorado, when I'm not in some hotel. Living out this life I've chose, and come to know so well. I love you near enough. The leader of dad and his eyes are growing old. But his blood runs through my instrument and his song is in my soul. My life has been a poor attempt to imitate the man. I'm just a living legacy to the leader of the band. I am a living legacy to the leader of the band.
Leader of the Band by Dan Fogelberg. I don't think you were expecting that. In fact, I know you weren't expecting that, right? we do play all kinds of music here on The Next Step. That was from a listener named Frank, okay, in Texas, of all places. I'm glad we have some listeners out there, and thank you for the beautiful note. I do agree with you. He was commenting on our discussion that we had last week on Next Step 501, where we were talking about just the points we were just talking about right now, about the need for leadership. And anyway, appreciated all of your comments, and I hope all of you enjoyed that song.
In the dark of the city, backwards, something stirs, then slips away. Law and order, darkest nights, bridge, crime, and punishment at play.
I am the state, said Louis XIV. I was just reminded during the song that Louis XIV also fit into that chain of people. I am Tacapa, I am the church, I'll take care of that, the just do it people. I know, maybe not in the same way, we don't want to use Louis XIV in that example, but yes, he did say, I am the state. So thank you for that. I do want to continue, though, in a different direction. I'm going to be talking about two letters, one which we studied briefly during our MLK retreat this past weekend. It is the letter that Martin Luther King Jr. wrote from jail. It's called the Birmingham Jail Letter. And I'm going to share with you a letter that will make you say, do people have nothing else to do? Oh, it certainly made me think like that too. It's from a group of clergymen. There, by the way, both letters have to do with groups of clergy, as I'll explain in a moment. But this is a group of clergymen who are, guess what? They're protesting. You'll never guess. Did I just tell you? Did you hear the first part of my show? You know what these people are protesting? And they've signed their name to it, over 50 clergymen. They're protesting women being ordained as deacons. Let's use it, deaconesses. I know. Get a life. Are you guys for real? Yes, they're for real. So I'm going to talk about these two letters. And when you see things like this, you have to wonder, like, where are people's heads at the moment? What are they up to? Are they all there? And lo and behold, we got back from the MLK retreat. I mean, I am pumped. We were really pumped. I wish you could see by the way, we are still doing our Bible studies and they are in different format on the web. You are not able to just get them anymore. And there'll be information coming out about how you can get them. But last Monday night, we had this Bible study. Right after driving 9 hours from the retreat, we did it. I was so charged. That's how intense my batteries were charged. After 9 hour drive, we went into the church and we shared this beautiful message. It was wild. A wild day. And then the next morning, we wake up to the news that one of the talk show hosts, namely Jimmy Kimmel, had interviewed in what he calls, he's got a segment on his show called Lie Witness News. Not eyewitness, lie witness. Yes, tell a lie and witness it. And you can't believe what he did. He went out and he talked to people about the debate between Martin Luther King Jr. and Donald Trump, the president. Not just a debate, but a Twitter debate. He actually asked people, what do you think about the Twitter wars between Martin Luther King Jr. and President Donald Trump? I mean, I didn't think that there was anybody in this category that would answer, but there were. Listen.
Dr. Martin Luther King has been gone for 50 years, but did that stop people from weighing in on this impossible feud? No, it did not. In tonight's Dr. King edition of Light Witness News.
We're talking to people today about the big Twitter war that's going on between Donald Trump and Dr. Martin Luther King. Why do those two not get along?
Well, it seems like Donald Trump isn't really into African Americans, we'll say. Mm-hmm. And obviously...
Was it wrong of Martin Luther King to call President Trump a fish-eyed fool, jive turkey?
No, not if it's true.
What are people saying about it?
That it's true.
Yeah. Clearly, there's some history between those two from their time spent together on Celebrity Apprentice.
This is great. Listen to this.
Do you remember when Bret Michaels beat Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. at selling frozen yogurt? Mm-hmm. How much of their current fight do you think stems from that?
He believes that.
There's probably a little bit. I mean, there's always a history.
Do you remember that episode?
I do remember that episode, yeah.
I mean, Bret Michaels could sell frozen yogurt.
Yeah.
Simple as
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, you know?
This morning, I'm sure you saw it, Trump came out and said, I have better dreams than Martin Luther King because in my dreams I could fly.
Yes.
What'd you think when you first heard that? You ever fly in your dreams?
No. But if I could, it'd be sweet, though.
Was it wrong of Martin Luther King to skip the president's inauguration last year?
I don't think that wrong was the right word, but I think that Martin Luther King has a right to not go.
Unbelievable.
Let me ask you like this. Is there any excuse he could have for not going to the inauguration?
I'd say yes, because everybody has a right to not go to something that they don't feel like they want to go
maybe
to.
Maybe he had plans that day.
Yeah, he could have had something else to go to. Maybe he had a family event. Maybe
maybe a funeral.
Yeah, maybe a funeral. So I think he has the right to go to where he wants to go. And I'm sure if he wanted to, maybe he just watched it on TV.
There you go. That's the answer.
Tell President Trump and Martin Luther King what they have to do.
I think you guys got to settle your differences and become friends.
Happy MLK Day, Martin Luther King.
All right.
You know, if you didn't hear it, you wouldn't believe it, would you? It's like so bizarre. It's so bizarre that there would be people today that would not only not know that Martin Luther King Jr. had died 50 years ago, but that they would continue. I mean, what was that part he says? Did you see? Do you think that this was payback for the way he was for the way he was treated on Celebrity Apprentice or something like that? You know, people, yeah. And it really tells you what a sad situation we do live in. I was talking to a very close friend this morning, and he was talking about there's so many people who, you know, don't have half of my education and are making so much money. It really makes you think like, yeah, well, then money shouldn't be the standard of the way we put value on things, right? Unfortunately, it is, because it is a painful, painful struggle to make that money. But and therefore, it does have value in defining who we are, because in measurement of the pain and the struggle that it causes. But in reality, yeah, it's true. It's true. You don't need to be smart to make money. You just need to be an opportunist who can be at the right place at the right time. And when you hear things like this, it really bothers me that this takes place. This is in 2018, a conversation on the street with about Martin Luther King and Donald Trump. Well, even more bothersome is this letter that I read. This is just a couple days ago. It came to me in my email. It's by the orthodox ethos, the orthodox way, truth, and life. Woo! Do you see why I'm always telling you that you got to be careful with this stuff? This is the orthodox truth, the way, and the life. The orthodox way, truth, and life is Jesus Christ, folks. It's not what some blogger is sitting around writing in the comfort of his house. No, the orthodox way, truth, and life is Jesus Christ. Anyway, on this blog, and I'm going to break tradition today, okay? I usually put links in our show notes to everything we talk about. You will not find a link to this article. If you want to find it, you'll have to do the research yourself. Go to Google search and look it up, and you'll find it. It's tragic. It's a group of, I don't want to give any more publicity than I am giving to it, but it's necessary for our conversation today. Because here is a group of clergy that are writing this letter. It is a public statement on Orthodox deaconesses. This is the title. By concerned clergy and laity, 56 signatures. And they're talking about the Patriarch of Alexandria's appointment of six deaconesses to the Congo in February 2017. And they go on to talk about why they shouldn't allow women to be deaconesses, and also saying that these ordinations were not based according to the canons of the church, and technical things like the ordination didn't take place during the divine liturgy, but took place afterwards. The ordaining bishop shouldn't have done this, and so on and so on. And I'm just reading this, and it goes on and on and on. I'm going, is this for real? Is this in a world that needs Christ right now? Do we care about things like this? Some blame resistance to the deacons on the worldly, purely cultural prejudice against women, but that accusation treats the church herself unfairly, even contemptuously, by ignoring legitimate prudential objections to the making of deaconesses motivated by genuine concern for the preservation of truly Christian and plainly apostolic respect for the distinction of male and female, to which our post-Christian world is increasingly hostile. And I would take a giant breath right there to emphasize that that was one sentence. But I needed to take a breath in between anyway. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous that they would even write something like this. Putting down that some bishop someplace has appointed women to serve as deacons, as servers in the church. You know, as I read this protest, you know where my head went? It went to the Pharisees. You know, Jesus's stern talk to the Pharisees. And by Pharisee, I want you to understand, I'm not making the judgment call. Pharisees are very decent people. They knew scriptures backwards and forwards. They knew scripture better than anyone else. But they weren't able to apply that scripture to life, and in fact thought themselves a little bit higher because they knew the law. I don't know if the group of Pharisees, if that tradition is still around, but I know that there are Pharisees all around us. One of them on talk radio, if you ever get, I don't know if he's syndicated, but here in the Los Angeles area, Dennis Prager. You listen to this guy, this is a Pharisee. He knows the scriptures. He knows them very well. But the self-assuredness, the cockiness is there. And this is why Jesus stood apart from them and made sure that everybody understood that that's not the way to do things. In fact, it was the only people that he was critical of. The only people he was critical of. Everybody else got away with everything, including getting away with murder. These people, he didn't let them get away. Woe to you, he says, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you lock people out of the kingdom of heaven, for you do not go in yourself, and when others are going in, you stop them. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cross sea and land to make a single convert, and you make the new convert twice as much a child of hell as yourselves. That's pretty intense for sure. But he doesn't stop there. He says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. For you are clean. You clean the outside of a cup and of the plate. But inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Listen to that. Greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisees, first clean the inside of the cup so that the outside also may become clean. And he doesn't stop there. He keeps going for it. He goes, you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside look beautiful, but inside they are full of bones of the dead and all kinds of filth. What imagery. It doesn't get any better than that, doesn't it? Aren't you ready to root for him and say, like, yeah, you go get him, Jesus? But you know what? That's one of the big problems that we have as Christians. And I'm going to take a break right now because I want to make it very clear. I'm not in that camp. Nobody can be in that camp. These are words that Jesus can utter. You and I cannot utter this. But I'm telling you, this is where my head went. You and I cannot call other people hypocrites because we stand in that same hypocrisy. And that's why Jesus says, first, take the log out of your own eye before you can see the speck in your brother's eye. And this is what the biggest problem is for Christians. Because we start reading scripture and we start saying, okay, Jesus was very critical of these people, and so I must be critical too. Yes, but that was Jesus. Jesus was critical because he could do that. He was the one without sin. And being uniquely qualified in the history of all humankind, he had that opportunity to point to somebody and said, you are of sin. You're wrong. And of all the different sins, all the different problems in the world that he could have pointed to, this is the only one he does point to. This is the only one that he says is wrong. So, look, without us being judgmental on anyone else, how about if we clean up our act, first and foremost, by not being in this camp? The whitewashed tombs. I think of that every time I go to a cemetery. I got to tell you that. Especially if you've needed cemetery assistance, they will sell you such nice plots. Such nice caskets, which look beautiful. In fact, even on the inside, they have pillows and stuffing. But what good is it? It's to carry dead and decaying bones. That's it. And Jesus' warning is a warning to us all. And the one who doesn't take this warning, well, then you got to start thinking, there's a problem there. This is what I started reading into this letter that I read from this clergy. Now, I'm going to talk about the tale of two letters. That was one letter. It was from the clergy who were protesting the decision for this woman, these women, to be ordained as deacons. Now, the second letter is just the other way around. Rather than clergy writing it to one person or the decision of one person, this is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King writing to clergymen. You see, during 1963, when he was jailed, he was confined in a Birmingham jail, many of the clergy mocked him. Many of the clergy criticized him. Many of the clergy looked around and said that this is unbecoming of a clergyman, Reverend King. And you could probably even imagine a little bit of finger wagging as they were saying this. And they were criticizing him for being a radical, for being an extremist. And there from Birmingham jail, Dr. King wrote a prolific writing called The Letter from Birmingham Jail. It's addressed to the clergy. And I really, if you've waited for me to give you homework, this is it. I sincerely wish and hope that everybody listening to this podcast today will take some time, especially this is January. It's the month that we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s life because it's his birthday month. And also in 2.5 months, we're going to be remembering the 50th anniversary of his assassination. And there will be so much said about him. I want you to read this, The Letter from Birmingham Jail, because as you read it, you understand how important it was for him to be referred to as a reverend, as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ. He wrote this from Birmingham Jail in 1963, and I'd like to share some excerpts from it. You know, this is a little bit before he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He was the youngest person to ever win the Nobel Peace Prize. He won it at age 35. But even at this point in 1963, he had achieved quite a bit of things. And this is the same year that he made the famous I Have a Dream speech. Before that, sitting in a jail, he's writing to clergy. And he starts it off, my dear fellow clergyman. And he talks about his accomplishments within the Christian community, Christian church. But more basically, I am in Birmingham because injustice is here. Just as the prophets of the 8th century BC left their villages and carried their thus saith the Lord far beyond the boundaries of their hometowns. And just as the Apostle Paul left his village of Tarsus and carried the gospel of Jesus Christ to the far corners of the Greco-Roman world, so am I compelled to carry the gospel of freedom beyond my own hometown. Like Paul, I must constantly respond to the Macedonian call for aid. Moreover, I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. This is just the opening words of it. Now, this is a rather long letter. Like I said, there'll be a link on today's show notes. So please do read it. Make some time, really. It's not an easy read, but make some time and do read it, okay? He goes on to challenge the priests, the ministers, the preachers, to understand his predicament and that this is the only action that he could take. A path of nonviolent resistance. It says, one has not only a legal but a moral responsibility to obey just laws. Conversely, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. I would agree with St. Augustine that an unjust law is no law at all. Any law that uplifts human personality is just. Any law that degrades human personality is unjust. Now, you know, I as a clergyman, I've heard this many, many times. People who say that, you know, as a clergyman, and this is what the Bible says, you have to obey the laws of your country, of your governments. And this is what they were throwing at him. Like, hey, you are here and you are resisting. And he's saying, well, my resistance is against evil. He says, I would do this. What about in Germany during the Second World War? He said, there was a law there. It was legal to kill Jews. How could you do that? That's a law that you cannot obey. And one after another, he cites examples. Then he gets to a point where he says, and you're calling me an extremist. Let me read this part. He goes, I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist. As I continued to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction from the label. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that have despitefully used you and persecute you. And he goes on to say, hey, you know, yes, you have to be an extremist. If you're a Christian, you have to be an extremist. But I think the most striking part of this entire letter comes to us when he makes a beautiful, beautiful challenge to the church. And this is something that today, as I'm going to read it, I know will reverberate in many of your hearts, because you'll hear the words that need to be spoken in all of our churches today. Dr. King was talking to a church that was sitting by, idly by, while crimes of injustice were being perpetrated against people, against human beings. And he said, you can't stand idly by. You have to voice your opinion. You have to talk. And in fact, our entire retreat last week had this overlying theme, that in the end, it's not the voice, the words of our enemies that we will remember, but it is the silence of our friends. That's what gets remembered. And so many times when people hurt you, things happen. It's not, you know the enemy. You know who he is. You know what he's going to do. But the real hurt, it's the silence. And the silence of friends. Of people who you expect to be standing with you, but aren't. And so with that, I'd like to share with you this thought. And this is really a statement to the church today, as much as it was 50 years ago. He says, I have traveled the length and breadth of Alabama, Mississippi, and all the other southern states on sweltering summer days, crisp autumn mornings. I have looked at the South's beautiful churches with their lofty spires pointed heavenward. I have beheld the impressive outlines of their massive religious education buildings. Over and over, I have found myself asking, what kind of people worship here? Who is their God? Where were their voices when the lips of Governor Barnett dripped with the words of interposition and nullification? Where were they when Governor Wallace gave a clarion call for defiance and hatred? Where were these voices of support when bruised and weary Negro men and women decided to rise from the dark dungeons of complacency to the bright hills of creative protest? In other words, you've got these beautiful churches, but what good are you if you stay silent? If you stay quiet when there's so much injustice all around you? And he continues, yes, these questions are still in my mind. In deep disappointment, I have wept over the laxity of the church. But be assured that my tears have been tears of love. There can be no deep disappointment where there is not deep love. Yes, I love the church. How could I do otherwise? I am in a rather unique position of being the son, the grandson, and great-grandson of preachers. Yes, I see the church as the body of Christ. But oh, how we have blemished and scarred that body through social neglect and through fear of being nonconformists. There was a time when the church was very powerful. In the time when the early Christians rejoiced at being deemed worthy to suffer for what they believed. In those days, the church was not merely a thermometer that recorded the ideas and principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that transformed the mores of society. Whenever the early Christians entered a town, the people in power became disturbed and immediately sought to convict the Christians for being disturbers of the peace and outside agitators. But Christians pressed on in the conviction that they were a colony of heaven, called to obey God rather than man. Small in number, they were big in commitment. They were too God-intoxicated to be astronomically intimidated. But by their effort and example, they brought an end to such ancient evils as infanticide and gladiatorial contests. I mean, in other words, they brought an end to things that were torturing and making people suffer. Yeah, that's what the church does. The work of Jesus Christ. It continues the work of Jesus Christ. And so there you have it. A tale of two letters, right? One letter by clergy that are saying, hey, lay off. We don't want to do the work of Jesus Christ. But we will pretend we're doing it. And the other one that says, no, this is the work of Jesus Christ. To address injustice and to bring about justice. An equal playing field, right? And I want you to remember these words that he spoke, because they really are the defining the words, not only for the church, but they're the defining words for what religion is all about. In fact, what is a good religion? What is a bad religion? What should it do? So I want you to just remember those words which we read. Any law that uplifts human personality is just, and any law that degrades human personality is unjust. Same true about religion, about the faith, about the church. If it's gonna uplift human personality, then it's just, it's okay. But if it degrades human personality, in other words, what God has created, if it degrades what God has created, how could it be just? Or simply, how could it be good? That's it, right? And so we simplify it, an easy gauge for you to look at what life throws at you. Just as absurd as people who were weighing in about Martin Luther King and Donald Trump engaging in a Twitter war. Yeah, that one's absurd, but these other ones are absurd in a different way. You're not just amazed, but they're just like hitting you. They're attacking you. Be careful. Let's take a break right now. Here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in just a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of our listeners, for all your wonderful notes, your support, your prayers. They go a long way in continuing this program. Want to do a shout out to all the wonderful people we've seen over the last couple weeks at different places, whether they're in Los Angeles. This week, we're going to be up in the Napa Valley. Following week, we're going to be up in Vancouver, British Columbia, at the St. Vartan Armenian Church. In fact, they did a radio interview with us just a couple nights ago. I have no idea how to find it. Okay, Sean will find it, and we'll have a link on today's show notes if you're inclined to listen to that. Not that great, but We did it, okay? That's something else that we'll remember. Anyway, a couple weeks from now, we'll be up in Vancouver. If you're up in that area, let's see, the night of the 27th, I'll be speaking in Vancouver, and Sunday morning at the Divine Liturgy on the 28th. I'm heading out right now to Glendale for Coffeescapes. My sister Anush has done this incredible exhibition, which continues until January 31st. If you are in the Southern California area, please, please, please do stop by. It's stuff that you will not see anywhere else. It is coffee, coffee come alive, coffee come awake. It is a beautiful show, something that needs to be experienced as much as seen. That takes place at the Rosalyn Galleries. We'll see if we could put a little link on today's show notes. Don't miss that one, and I hope you have a chance to come out. But I am heading over there. We're having the opening night with the artist and with a lot of people, and I'll be happy to report about it when we get back. Listen, thank you to all of you for being with us. Thank you for the group that went up to the MLK retreat. We'll try to put some pictures on today's show notes. Do check them out. Saco Lake, it was fantastic. Let's see if we got some great, great pictures. We'll probably use one for the cover as well. That's what you're looking at, Saco Lake. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together for us, for Susie, our producer, Sean, our engineer, this is Father Vosken inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off-balance top visits.